it's no longer egocentric. And I think the imposter really revolves around the ego. It's just like, ah, maybe my story's not good enough. Maybe, you know, something I did, and like, maybe the imposter's telling me I'm not good enough. But because this venture is bigger than I am, whenever that visit occurs, it's just like, it's almost like just muted. Cause it's like, it doesn't matter anymore because it's not about me. It's about what the company can do.
This is You May Contribute a Verse. I'm Brenna Dinnerup, Kidlit author of The Law of Birthdays, illustrated by Maria Kondra, coming this May from Cardinal Rule Press. I'm joined by my co-host, Josh Munkin, Kidlit author of Naked, illustrated by Gabby Morris, publishing by Tilmore Press this December, and podcast wizard John Seymour, author-illustrator of the newly released A Morning with Blueberry. And that was our guest, John Seymour, our podcast wizard and owner-editor of the new Tilmore Press. We are stoked to have him on the show to hear all about how Tilmore got started, their submission guidelines, and the exciting debut reveal of our very own Josh Munkin. Here's John's verse.
Okay, so let's talk about Tilmore. I'm very excited.
Now that we've had our 20 minutes of pre-conversation.
I know. Well, this is for people listening. We're here with our podcast wizard / editor John Seymour, and we're very excited to announce that he has started his own publishing company, Tilmore Press, which is amazing. And he's agreed to sit down with us and chat all about it. And I'm really excited because, like, John, like, you've done a ton to get this thing off the ground. Like, everything looks like amazing. Like, the new releases coming out and the illustrations and just the stories. Like, tell us how it got started. Like, how you. Like, what was the impetus, the passion behind it? Like, all of it.
That story goes quite a ways back. But, I'll do...
We've got time.
I will do my best. So, we have to rewind a little bit. I had always really enjoyed, you know, doing different creative projects. I just always dabbling in different things. And then over the course of the pandemic, which is, I think, is a big, big consistent trend for people because we had a whole bunch of free time and we were bound to our homes.
Stuck with a bunch of small children, most of us.
Yeah. Well, my son was really young. So he was born in June 2019. So he had a few months right before the pandemic. And then we're just like reading stories and reading more stories and more stories. And then, like most people, I was just like, hey, I could try this. This seems fun. So then, True to form, did a rhyming picture book for my first one. And that got picked up. You know, as I edit all the podcasts, it's just like everyone's first story is always a rhyming one.
We cut our teeth.
Did you query Jennifer March Soloway with it? Because that's the other, like, everybody does that too.
No. Okay. So I was so new to the Kidlit world that I really didn't know where to start. So I just started as anyone else does, just like, I'll just do something and, you know, research how to query and stuff like that. And so I started querying and it got picked up right away, but it got picked up by a hybrid publisher, which I knew nothing about at the time. That experience was not great. Admittedly, but it was very eye-opening in terms of like how the process works and contracts and like some of it was there. So that book went out.
For the listening audience, will you just break down real quick what a hybrid publisher is?
Yeah, I guess the easy way is that the author has to put some money up front to pay for the manuscript or for the story development versus the publisher putting that money up front. So I had to pay for it and I was fine with it because I was super excited as most people are. Mm-hmm. But you know, now I know better. Not to say that all hybrid publishers are as bad as, you know, or provide the same experience that I had, but I'm not keen personally.
Well, and it's a matter of just priority. Like, yeah. If a hybrid is the way you want to go, that's totally cool. And if that's not, then traditional is what you want or self-publishing or whatever. I just wanted 100%. To clarify.
And in fact, I know two authors who swear by it. Like, they love it. They are going to keep doing it. So awesome.
Yeah.
Like everyone has their own preferences.
Totally. Just depends on what you want to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So that experience sort of led me to like, well, like they didn't do a whole lot. And it wasn't sort of what I expected. I don't know what I was expecting, but anyway.
You're a blank slate.
It was what it was. Yeah. And then I was just like, well, yeah. I have these other ideas. And then I started looking into the self-publishing route. And so I self-published 3 books. And when you start getting into the self-publishing side of the industry, it's really, really eye-opening in the terms of like what is involved with developing a book, because you're literally doing all the roles. You have to write the story. You have to figure out the illustrations. You have to do the development, the design, the marketing. You have to figure out like the descriptions, the blurbs, the buy-side categories, like who's your target audience or readership. Like you do all that. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Anyway, so figure that out.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. I was like, okay, this is cool. Still didn't think much of it though, because all I wanted with my books is to have it physically so I can read it to my kids. I wasn't too concerned about the money or like making money or making a living off this. I was just like, I'd love to read these to my kids. And I'll sort of preface on that, that the 3 books that I self-published, my son at the time had kind of helped me write. So like we were doing these little things where like I'd come up with part of a story and he would add a piece and we just sort of like fool around. And I was just, there was one. So I did this other story called Boat the Tugboat, and I gotta give credit where it's due. So my son probably wrote most of this and he was probably two at the time. So,
you cut him in and on the royalties.
I mean, he lives here rent free, so yeah, you know.
Leave the royalties in trust, right?
Nice. Yeah.
I think I had a dedication in one of them to.
That's enough.
He'll be fine with it. Anyway, so like what happened is I think we were doing a bath time, and we were talking about like this boat and like, oh, you know, here's boat or whatever we were calling it at the time. And then, you know, then there's a storm and we're splashing and stuff like that. I was like, and that would happen. And then he's like, and he put it on the shelf in the shower. He's like, he's on a volcano. I was like, all right, what else happened?
For the listening audience, John's eyes get real big.
Yeah.
This is really good. And then, you know, he had a lot of really creative ideas, but I like that sort of authenticity where it's just like, it's just wild and wacky and it doesn't have to make sense. And that's like this candidness with picture books. Like as adults, we have this adult bias of what we think children want, at least from my experience. And sometimes that's not the case. So with these books, just as an example, so I do my illustrations black and white. So I use I have a dip pen or fountain pen, and I do all my illustrations by hand, and then I scan them and, you know, edit them, like clean them up a little bit. And so all my illustrations for my books are black and white, and they're sort of very Shel Silversteinian, because I just love Shel so much. I love his work. And a lot of feedback that I got from people who hadn't read the book, like when I was trying to actually push the marketing at some point, was that like, they're not really interested in black and white books. They're like, But those that read it were like, hey, this is really good. Like, this is really great. And like, we love it. And, you know, I had some nice reviews here and there, especially for Blueberry. Blueberry the Muffins, which is, you know, a different story. So A Morning with Blueberry is the story. And a lot of it is just that like, you know, kids aren't interested in black and white books. I was like, but no kid, like, and I've done library readings with these books. No kid has ever mentioned the absence of color. They just, it's a story. There's low impact illustrations, which was another part that I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be just an illustration that doesn't draw your eye in different places. Just like, it's just a black and white kind of outline of a muffin. You know, that's it. And to focus on the story. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I wanted. So, you know, when we think what kids want is not always the case. Sometimes kids just want chaotic nonsense. And so,
yep,
you gotta give it to them. They want
100% agree. Yeah, like my kid can see like a message-driven book 1,000 miles away. Yeah. He won't even open it. Like he can tell by the cover, and he's just like, He's like, that's a mama book. I'm not reading that. And I'm like, okay,
yeah.
No, he's very like, he's pretty brutal. Like he won't go near anything that looks like it's going to be serious or heavy or like have any sort of like learning element. Nope, not interested. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with color. I'll say he's fine with a black and white book if it looks like fun and quirky and just like. I will say we have a Morning at Blueberry at our house, and he thought it was awesome. He opened that thing right away and was into it. Yeah. So nothing, it doesn't matter about the color. Yeah. Anyways.
I mean, to put it a different way, it feels worth exploring this notion of like, yeah, okay, maybe there is a market for less kinetic, frenetic. Well, there's chaos that happens in the books, but less kinetic and frenetic sort of illustration styles, minimalist sort of like market segment. You can do market research, but if something doesn't exist out there, you know, people aren't going to have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole pile of stories that, you know, were inspired from conversations with my kids. I don't know if I'll ever publish them, to be honest. Now that I know what I know from the publishing side, I was like, they were so much fun and I had so much confidence in them at that time. But now that I'm seeing behind the scenes, like the veil has been lifted. I was just like, yeah, actually, those aren't what I'm interested in, even though I wrote them. So that's super interesting. And I think about that a lot, actually, because one of the reasons that started leading me towards the path that I've taken is I started really thinking about, okay, like this is what people are doing to get their books traditionally published. You know, they have to ideally get an agent, and that's sort of, like, it's a bit of a gamble. Like, the timing has to be perfect. You know, we talk about this a lot on the podcast. Timing has to be perfect. The story has to be perfect. Like, there's just all these things. I think Adam Blackman had said it was very serendipitous series of events. And I was like,
yeah, Adam Blackman from Cardinal Row Press.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, we have absolutely an episode you can listen to. Yep.
Yeah. And so, like, you could get through to the agent, and then you have to get through to the publisher, and then you have to get through the editorial rounds. And I was just like, what happens if I want to publish 500 books in my lifetime, right? Because one book could take 2 or 3 years. And yes, I could do a couple books concurrently. But is it physically possible to do 500 books? And I was just like, I don't know if that's the case with the traditional route. So I started thinking about that. I started thinking about my experiences in like having to do all the marketing and the development of the books. And, you know, I hired my own editors and, you know, hired my own illustrators. And I did all that. And I was just like, well, I really enjoy being creative. Like, that's just my shtick. I also enjoy business. I had several business attempts in my youth. You know, I went to college for business development and entrepreneurial adventures.
That's a great degree.
I don't remember what the title of the course was, but anyway, we'll just say that. But like, I had tried a whole bunch of things. You know, I had tried, like, car forums. I had tried a clothing line. I had tried renewable energy. I was going to get into the solar business.
Oh, and wow.
Bit of a ramp all these up things into like industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the more I got into them, the more I was like, this isn't feasible. And that, you know, optimism sort of just dwindled because I found out what was actually involved. But I was young. And that's actually a good segue in like how I named Teal Moore, because Moore was part of my last name, obviously, but Teal was always the name that I named my other companies. Teal was always part of the name. And I was just like, that's kind of like a Warren Buffett, like Berkshire Hathaway kind of thing, where he just kept that name going until it just, you know, stuck. I think it was like a luggage company first, and then, yeah. So
Warren, if you want to come on the show, let us know.
If you want to write a kid's book first and then come on the show, Warren, we've got standards.
Or if you would like to just, you know, sponsor the podcast and not come on at all, that's also an option.
Yeah. So I started thinking about like, well, I really like being creative and I really like business. It's like, is there a way that I can do this? Like, and so I started doing a lot of research and delving. And it's interesting because I had mentioned to you guys before I mentioned to anyone, it's like, hey, I don't know if this is a conflict of interest, but this is sort of what I want to do. I don't know when we did that. And then it just snowballed from there. And like right now we're a small team, and we will be growing eventually. It's not just me right now. And it's going well. It's been one of the most challenging things I've ever done. I think being a parent would be the most challenging thing I've ever done. Mm. But when I think about the company and how I see it and how I've experienced it, I keep thinking that it's not too dissimilar from, you know, being a parent in some regards. And I feel like this is a bit loaded, but the way I think about it is that there was an idea. The idea was conceived, and the idea was there, but nothing sort of happened for a while. And then there's that gestational period where it was just like, it started like growing and growing and growing until it just came out into the world and there was no stopping it. And once
it was interesting because you had cravings.
Yeah. And once it came into the world, there's just like, there's no going back. And there's so many times where it's like, is this the right move? And it's like, it doesn't matter. It's the same like with being a parent. It's like, once the kid is here, like you just do whatever you can with whatever you have and you do the best you can do. And no one could ask for more, right? And so that's what we're doing.
And it occurs to me to, I guess, press on this, which I feel about my own rating a lot. It's like, why me? Why should my stuff get published? Like, why you have to explore this as well. It's like, why you owning a publishing company? I guess the much like having a baby, it's like, well, why not? Like anybody can do it and you figure it out along the way. Is that kind of it?
Yeah. It's like I said, it's been difficult. And you know, there's been issues, not issues, but like trials against motivation and trying to find motivation, especially in the beginning. I'd be lying if I said that our good friend the imposter wasn't ever involved. But for me, and I don't know if this is actually helpful to anyone, but for me, there was a way around the imposter syndrome. And when I think about what Tealmore can do and will do, you know, a portion of our proceeds are always donated to reforestation, another portion always donated to charities. It's no longer egocentric. And I think the imposter really revolves around the ego. It's just like, maybe my story's not good enough. Maybe, you know, something I did, and like, maybe the imposter's telling me I'm not good enough. But because this venture is bigger than I am, whenever that visit occurs, it's just like, it's almost like just muted. Cause it's like, it doesn't matter anymore because it's not about me. It's about what the company can do. So for me, when it's beyond the ego, like the imposter is just useless. So if that's helpful, I hope it is. But that's what I've experienced. So
yeah, I think that's a valid point for sure. Yeah, like make it bigger than yourself. That's, I feel like that works outside of Kidlit too, and outside of, you know, any sort of creative venture. Like make it not about yourself, and then it's easier to like, you know, move forward.
Yeah.
Gosh, I just saw it. We're just going to keep calling them tweets. I think I just saw a tweet, or maybe it was a thread this morning. Just a reminder to always keep in mind the people who could, and it's from a writer's perspective, the people who could possibly be consuming your work in the future. And like, why hamper yourself? Why let the imposter get the better of you? I mean, extrapolating that out into starting your own publishing company, it's not like, you can ask yourself like, why would I have the remit to start a publishing company? But then the response, to put what you're saying a different way, is, you know, why not? Maybe there's a different type of story that I can bring into the world and help, you know, put it in the kids' hands that doesn't exist yet today.
Yeah. And so for me, one of the biggest things that I needed to do in order to push forward with this is really figure myself out. Like, what are my strengths? What kind of person am I? How do I learn? How do I, you know, just know yourself? Because no one else in the world knows you better than you. And so I knew that there were certain ways that I learn better, or certain ways that I can do things in a different way. And so one of them is just doing it, like just putting the fire under my butt, proverbially, and just going for it. And I learn more from experience. And like at the start of TLMore, there were so many mistakes, and that was part of the process. So I had used Blueberry sort of as the pilot to really finesse those processes and making sure everything was in place. And once I realized that, yes, this is definitely feasible. It's going to be very, very, very difficult and tricky, but it's doable. And I have a great team. And we're just going to keep moving forward the best we can. That's all we can do.
So, okay. So on that note, because I know people who are listening are going to have questions about number one, are you open to unagented submissions? I mean, I know the answer to some of these, but also what are you looking for? And like, you know, cause I know a lot, especially PB writers specifically, like not so much presses, but when you're querying for agents, a lot of times it's like, okay, yes, I'm open to picture books, but it has to be author illustrator only. I'm not open to just text. So that kind of thing too, like author mm-hmm. illustrator and text only. Are you doing graphic novels? Will you branch out into middle grade, YA? Just mm-hmm. that sort of stuff.
Brenna's asking yep. for a friend, like usual.
Yeah. Awkward.
Yeah. So we haven't released our wish list yet, our manuscript wish list, and that will be coming out, I think, in the springtime as we plan for 2025 releases.
Cool.
But right now, I think the focus is on picture books right now. Absolutely, definitely going to go into MG. I do have a keen interest towards chapter books at some point, and I don't think there's any limits. I'm not sure about the YA side yet, but I don't see why that couldn't be possible. We just have to mm-hmm. do the planning for it. And I think as we grow internally, we'll have more resources to allocate for these different kinds of books.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of what we look for, without disclosing too much, really it's picture books. There is a focus towards informational fiction and nonfiction. Fiction, again, definitely not off the table, but we want to push towards informational fiction and nonfiction.
And did you say anything about graphic novels?
I did not, but just curious. Yeah, those are also not off the table either.
I mean, I have several, so I'm just
of course. Yeah, no, like really, like there's no limitations right now. We had a couple MGs queried. They weren't like, I'm open to the idea for MG, but they have to be, I don't know, they just have to be that right fit. And it's really hard for me to say this, like, oh, it just has to be the right fit at the right time. Like, there's,
yeah, easy.
I don't just know what the problem
figure
is.
Figure it out.
Read my
and
mind.
It's hard for me to say that because I was on the other end of it not too long ago, and it's just like, you know, cue a Star Wars quote, like, I've become the very thing I sought to destroy. Or, you know.
Right.
And it was, honest to God, it was difficult with the first rejection. I was just like, oh no, like, I just want to take everybody's stories. And they were all good, but it's just, some were just not the right fit. And that is a very subjective thing. But in terms of like planning for the future and the marketing, it does have to meet, like connect a few dots in order for it to go through. So
this is where Brenna and I both have questions. Well, I want to ask that, but I wanted to go back and talk about Blueberry for a little bit and get more specific with timelines, because Blueberry is one of the books that you wrote for yourself. And I appreciate you, like the way that Blueberry shows up in the world now is revised edition, which mm-hmm. was specific yep. to being published as a TLMore book, as I understand it. But using your own book as a guinea pig had to be an interesting process, like producing it differently, laying it out differently, negotiating all that with your own work as a test. And then that's going to segue into talking about, you know, how and when you opened up, but let's talk about Blueberry first.
Blueberry. Yeah. So I had acknowledged going through the pursuit of, you know, my research and my business planning and getting this off the ground at some point, like that, you know, from a marketing perspective, there has to be more to the book design than what I had done for my book. So the first editions of them were a little lackluster, but at that time when I made them, like I loved it. And all I wanted to say is like, if I love it, why wouldn't I put this out in the world? You know? And there was a quote from Rick Rubin, I'll paraphrase it, but it's just like, you don't put your art in the world for other people because then it's not art, right? So like you put it out for you and what you put your heart into and what you love, and then it's actually your art. It's, you know, if you made all your movies like Michael Bay and, you know, just like there's all explosions everywhere, then it's just like, it's all the same. There's nothing different. There's no uniqueness. So even if it's not well received, and even if Blueberry was a total flop, it did all right. but like, it doesn't matter because I was just really proud of it. I was really proud of when it first came out. I was even more proud when we did the updates to it. You know, new cover, some updates, to the slight updates to the story and the illustrations. And like, I couldn't imagine it any other way. Like, I look at it and I'm just like, it's perfect in my eyes. So I, yeah.
So I, okay. So I have several things to say. So first of all, I very much appreciate you saying that, because I feel like as a creative in the kidlit space, specifically with picture books, like we cannot hear that enough, that you know, that you have to be doing it for yourself. And, you know, it's easy enough to say that and then to just get caught up in the marketability and the hooks and like, how am I going to present this? And what will the query letter look like? And, you know, what are my comps and like, where does it fit? But if you, and I'm speaking from personal experience very recently, I was like, just sort of at the end of like, what I'm like, I don't like, what am I even doing anymore? Like, what is the point? Because the, you know, the passes like stack up. It doesn't matter how many champagne passes you get. Passes are passes. You still don't have the agent. You still don't have the deal. Like, it's really, really easy to get caught up in that and to sort of be putting your energy out instead of going inward and remembering, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Like, why do I enjoy this? Like, let me get back to like that spark of like, when I first started writing picture books, I used to wake up and be like, oh, what story am I working on today? Oh yeah, that's right. Okay. That one is super fun. And like, I can't wait to like figure out how this might work, or like if I can rewrite it in this way. And I had sort of lost that because I was so focused on trying to get the agent, get the deal, yeah, make the moves, like make something happen. Yeah. And I can't control any of that. That doesn't, yeah, have anything to do with me. Like you're saying, very subjective, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate you saying, you know, like it didn't matter to you how Blueberry did out in the world. The fact was he was there and he was out in the world and it felt good for you. It, yeah, felt good to like write that story and make it a reality. So,
yeah,
however that, you know, whatever that means to you, the, you know, the listening audience, whatever that means, whatever spark that is, whatever joy you find in the writing, like just make sure to get back to that, you know, like Charles Santoso, we had him on a while back. He has a little sticky note on his computer and every day he looks at it and it says, remember to enjoy it. Like just remember, you know, to have fun, to like what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's my first thing. Then I wanted to circle back real quick to submissions. So I know you are open to unagented submissions. Do you, yeah, think at some point that will change? And if it does, will you also do like an open submission window, like similar to like Cardinal Rule Press, yep, Little Press, like those?
Yep.
Is that, yep, how that'll look? Yeah.
Yeah. So we're definitely open to unagented submissions. We had been queried by a couple of agents in the past. And it's awesome. I feel that we're definitely willing to take on new authors as we already have. As long as there's that, like that spark that like, hey, this is a really good story. Even if it needs more development, like you can see that. I've seen some books published, that pre, you know, my involvement with Kidlit, like I thought were awful. I was just like, this is a terrible book. Why am I reading this? Like, it's such a pain in the butt.
Name names, Sean.
I'm not in the business to make enemies. Yeah. But, no, but the thing is that shifted drastically to, like, there are no such, there's no such thing as a bad book. It's just an underdeveloped book. Like, the book should have, if there was something that I didn't enjoy about the book, or that, like, was off, or, like, you know, maybe it was like a rhyming book and the meter was off, like, that should have been caught through the process. Or, you know, maybe it just need a little bit more je ne sais quoi, like just a little bit more elbow grease. Like, there's no such thing as a bad book. They're all good and they all can be good. It's just, it needed a bit more love. That's all. Definitely open to unagented submissions. We will have a submission window in the spring. I think that makes a lot of sense for now. And
are you not open right now then? Like, you'll open in the spring? Is that what you're saying? So right now closed.
Yeah, right now.
Okay.
We'll see when this airs. Right
at the point of, the point of this.
Oh, right.
Being late January, right. Yes. But if this
January airs, closed.
By the spring, yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay.
But what I'll say, going back to the first point you had, is in that you really have to just enjoy it. So the other thing is that you don't know the impact your work will have with the world. You don't know if it will have an impact or not. You don't know if it'll have a positive impact or not. But if it's something that is just uniquely yours, like our lives in all of time and space, we will never exist again, right? Billions of years in the past, billions of years in the future, anywhere in space, like, we're here once. There will never be another me or you or Brenna. Like that's it. So just do what you can. So, and so, I guess to reiterate that, or to iterate that differently, like Shel Silverstein for me, I wasn't keen on the poetry when I was young. I remember being grade three in the library, being read his book of poems. I think it was Where the Sidewalk Ends for that one, by our grade three teacher, Mr. Crossan. And I remember, like, being in the pit and just, like, we're all just watching. And some of them were super silly and easy to follow. And some of them I just didn't care for. But I loved looking at his drawings. They were just so wacky and, like, wild. And, like, no one else was doing that. And I loved that. And so I have a bias in my brain that when I try to picture work, like, I often picture it black and white. And that's just how I do it now. So that's why I do that. But the other thing is, like, you don't know the impact it's going to have. You don't know who's going to be influenced by your work, right? Like, I don't think Shell, at the time of his writing, was like, hey, I wonder if this will inspire someone to open a publishing company. Like, that, it doesn't work like that. Yeah. But it all sort of just, like, builds up together. And so I'll mention that, and, you know, I've mentioned a lot about, you know, how I feel about the podcast and, like, I kind of am where I am because of this podcast. So yeah, I know you guys know, but for the audience, when I was trying to do my research on how to figure out how to get into the world of kid lit, okay, like, I got to learn more about agents and editors and, you know, submission processes, I just spammed this podcast from start to finish, like every episode. And I was just listening and trying to absorb as much as I can. And I was just like, I remember, like, I queried Joyce Sweeney, and like a little while after, like, I listened to her episode, and, like, true to her form, like, she was so quick with her reply, and I was just like, oh, that's so nice. And she, like, that's just who she is. And it's just so nice hearing all this, like, aggregated information, really helpful information.
Joyce is amazing.
Yeah.
They are delightful in every way.
I'll say that I really thought I had a shoe-in for, you know, the Seymour Agency, being John Seymour, but...
did you use that in your query letter? You're like, look.
I tweeted them a couple times, like, hey, this would be great. But
look for those hooks wherever you can find them, guys.
Anyway, so the podcast helped me get to where I needed to be, I guess. It helped me to get to where I am now. But what I haven't told you guys, and I guess this is interesting, is I reached out to you, Brenna, because I had won a critique from you, I think, at one point, and you read my giant story, which is...
Yes.
I'd still love to make that happen at one point, but, you know, priorities.
I don't think I know the specifics of this.
So I had won... over Twitter at the time, I had one, like, critique from Brenna, And then I thought that was like, oh, cool. Like, this is the host of the podcast. And like, she, I got a critique from her. And then, you know, at some point, like spamming the Kidlit episode, the Versi podcast episodes, I was like, I need to get more involved, you know? And I remember listening to the episode with Justin Cologne and just like how involved he was. And like, and because of his involvement, he was able to make more of an impact. And I was just like, I should get more involved. And then maybe I tried offering critiques here and there, but my big move was like, hey, Brenna, like if you need help with the podcast, like I'd love to try and be a part of it and to help. And lo and behold, here we are. The part that I haven't told you guys, and I guess I was a little hesitant saying this, but when I was listening to the podcast and I was going through my episodes, there was a point of me that was always saying like, man, how great would it be to be on this podcast one day? And I was just like,
Yeah, and it's happening. I love this so much. It's like a full circle moment.
It's on the forefront of my brain because like I had thought about this so often. I was like, what kind of story do I have to write to be on this podcast? And I'll never ask. I would never ask you guys. And I was just like, one day it'll happen.
I love that so much. And I have to say, so when I got your message, because you DM'd me on Twitter and you were like, hey, yeah, I'd like to be more involved. Like, could you use me? Could I be helpful? Like I could do some editing. Josh and I had just been talking. Like I had just said to him, I was like, wouldn't it be great if we could have like somebody come on to help us edit? Because, you know, it would free up some writing time. It would free up more like, yeah, we could, you know, do more with the podcast. Like I'd have more bandwidth because, you know, editing takes time. Like I equate it a lot to like vegan cooking because vegan cooking is not difficult, but it is very time consuming. You are always chopping stuff or soaking things or like waiting for stuff to like
washing,
be ready. Yeah. It's like a lot, right? And you know, editing is the same. Like it's not difficult, but it takes time. Like you have to listen to the whole episode. You have to make cuts here and there. You have to like really listen to each track. Like, anyways, so your message was super serendipitous. I remember screenshotting it, sending it to Josh and being like, dude, like check it out. Like this would be amazing.
And I immediately went like,
yeah, I'm so glad you messaged us.
Yeah. I went who is this guy? Sounds fine. We could trial him out.
Just a guy.
Yeah. Just a dude starting a publishing house. It's like not a big deal.
Not particularly metaphysical, but that, holy cow, that sure is an example of, I mean, what we're doing right now is
wild, an
example of manifesting really working out. Like there was something that you wanted and you shot your shot and here we are.
I was going to say, combination of, you know, putting it out there, manifesting it and shooting your shot and just like going for it because you never know. Like, I know in the Kidlit world, it's hard to do that progressively because, you know, we get a lot of no's, but there's also like a lot of yeses to be had out there, especially within the community. Like, I don't know if I've ever reached out specifically to a Kidlit like author or illustrator or like, you know, like a peer and had, you know, and asked for like advice or a favor or help or just whatever and had somebody say no. That doesn't generally happen. Like in my experience, I've reached out, you know, been like real and authentic and just been like, look, this is what I'm dealing with. Like, do you have any insight? Like, could you please help me? People are always, they're always there to say, yes, I have not heard a no, I don't think.
Yeah. So. And so when I first started in the Kidlit world, it was actually Jessica Whipple. That was one of the first to reach out to me.
Jessica Whipple. Hi, Jessica.
She's just so wonderful. Anyway, so she had reached out to me, I guess, as I'm starting to find things, and you know, she had offered to help me on a couple of things, and I was just like, if this is what the Kidlit world is like I'm all in. Like this is just so wonderful. So shout out to Jessica. Thank you for helping. And yeah, I guess that's
okay.
So we can't talk about business anymore. We're having too much of an emotionally honest conversation.
Well, I'm about to segue into more serendipitous, exciting stuff because so we're getting close to the hour, and I just want to make sure that we shout out that Josh is getting published. Like his book is going to be published with Tealmoor, and it's amazing. So I mean, tell us all about how it happened, guys. I've read this manuscript. I love this manuscript. It's going to be it's hilarious. It's heartwarming. It's everything that you want in a book. I'm so excited for it to come out.
People have read this manuscript, I think, at this point. It's go ahead, John.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll just say that I had gotten it from you, and I was just I'll check it out. If it's not in the cards, it's not in the cards.
No, don't play it cool, John.
No promises.
Yeah, you know.
No promises, Josh.
We'll see. So I read it and I was just like, this is amazing. This is actually like so good. I don't know how we're gonna market this, but like I don't even care. This is just great. And so much so that I told you, Josh, I was like, you should probably query this before you query me. Like, you should put this out there because I think you'll get more opportunity with other people with this book because it's really good. But
it is.
Luckily, I guess I should say what it is. Should I talk about the book itself?
We should say what it is.
Yeah, you can say it. It'll be announced either by or before this.
This is part of what I love so much about this manuscript. When I say the name of the manuscript, it's not going to translate over audio. It's called Naked. It's a picture book called Naked, but the title of the book is Nay Kid, like Nay the sound like that a horse makes, and then a kid.
You have to say it's Naked.
It's Nay. Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Naked.
You got it.
Yes, it's based on a play on words, and it is about a little boy who gets undressed and then puts on a horse mask and becomes the superhero Naked to right wrongs and rescue kittens. And how I feel about this book is very, very thankful, first of all, John, that you were willing to take a chance on the manuscript. Second of all, the behind the scenes look, this is a very sappy conversation. I feel like we're being very emotionally honest, but the behind the scenes look is, I want to be very clear that this was not, us embarking on this partnership was never intended as a, I know John, he'll publish my book sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
the offer was open to us to send you something to have you look at it. And I sat on that for weeks and I wasn't exactly sure that I had anything mm-hmm. that was worth publishing because publishing through Tealmore or sending you for your consideration at least mm-hmm. because Naked as a manuscript has existed in my files for several years now. It was one of the first mm-hmm. manuscripts that I sent to our critique group. Shout out to Totally Funny. And I've queried it a bunch. Not to publishers, but to lots of agents. And I think that is one of those, I think it's one of those that's harder for agents, especially to take a chance on, because it's hard to sort of envision how this is going to look in the marketplace and how, you know, if an agent is to reach out with this, how it's going to be received by publishers. But, you know, I completely agree with you. It's a manuscript that I believe in with my whole heart as being just so fun. It's so fun for me to think about. And it was so fun for me to write. And that doesn't come particularly often when I believe in my work so much that, I actually have a blast writing it. So I'm very excited for it.
It's time for this week's book reviews. In celebration of Josh's debut picture book, Nay, Kid, I've asked for a little help from our friends. First, from Karen and Becky, in their own words.
Hey Josh, it's Cece. Cheers and congratulations. We are so proud your Nay turned into a Yay. Kids are going to love your wild creativity as much as we do.
Hi Josh, it's Becky Walker. I just want to congratulate you on your upcoming book, Nay Kid, that's going to be in the bookstores. In a bookstore, you have a book. I'll be the very first one in line to buy it. You're amazing. You've worked so hard and been so dedicated. And I just want you to know we're behind you 100% and we'll be cheering you on. Congratulations, Josh.
And from Lindsay, Josh, a huge congrats on your book deal. Naked is fun, silly, and full of great energy. I just know kids and parents are going to love it. Looking forward to reading it with my girls. From Caroline, it's wonderful to hear that Naked will be trotting out into the big, wild world. Kids are going to love him. Best of luck. From Meredith, congratulations, Josh. I'm so excited for you, and I can't wait to get my hands on a copy. I know kids everywhere will want to be Naked. Next, we need to brainstorm appropriate Halloween costumes. Alicia, Josh, we are so excited for you, we can barely rein it in. Can't wait to have a copy of this hilarious book in my hands and classroom. And from me, I'm so proud of you and this fun, imaginative, hilarious book. I cannot wait for it to be out in the world and for the adventures of Naked to carry on. Huge congrats on this big milestone, my friend. Don't forget to get your own reviews and library requests in. It's the number one way to help author sales. Community shout-out time. Love the podcast and want to help support more great episodes like this one? Check out our Patreon and choose the tier that works best for you. Grab some cool podcast swag, or give a community shout-out, or even leave us a review. Anything helps to spread the word. A big thank you to everyone out there listening. And now, back to our show. And big congrats again, Josh. We love you.
Which is another, I mean, that's just another, you know, the through thread here on the podcast is, you know, like, enjoy what you're doing. And that really is, like, the key. Like, yeah, because this one you really did enjoy and it was fun. And I'm so glad that you know, decided to query John with it, because otherwise it might have just sat in Google Docs forever and not gone anywhere. Because it, you know, based on what I know, like Josh and I talk, you know, often about like queries and sending stuff out and submission and just, you know, whatever, all kinds of stuff. But as far as I knew, like Naked was dead. Like he had put it away. He wasn't going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you query it, you query a story so much and you get so many, you know, X amount of passes. You're just kind of like, well, you know, this one isn't meant to be. So as far as I knew, yeah, that's what had happened. And so I'm so glad that it, you know, it's going to live on. Like this story is amazing. My kid's going to love it because this is my kid. Like my kid hates clothes. Yeah. He doesn't want to wear clothes ever. He's downstairs on the couch watching a show right now, totally naked. But like, so anyways, I feel like it'll resonate with kids everywhere. Like, yeah.
Well, and here's the calculus that might be helpful for some people, because I don't tend to, on the podcast, talk a great deal about my own writing, but I've learned, like everybody else is, over the course of the pandemic and beyond. And one of the things that a couple of things that I've learned is, one, this manuscript was too, I cared about it too much to like keep sending it out and having it get rejected. And so I had benched it for a couple of years. The calculus was, if let's say, as an unagented author, let's say that I do get an agent, it's certainly not going to be the title that my agent leads with publishers. And thus it probably wouldn't be my debut. And so, you know, even if, like you said, John, even if we took Naked and went back out with it elsewhere, it would still be years, before it ever saw a deal, let alone saw the light of day.
Yeah.
So that's where we are.
Yeah. And again, I was just going to say that the timing is, it's all about timing, right? Like I like to think Blueberry just, you know, the world wasn't ready for Blueberry with the black and white thing again, you know, like, and you know, maybe at that point in time, the world just wasn't ready to get Naked. So.
Nice.
You went there.
I feel like I'm going to pull that clip for the intro of this podcast.
Yeah, perfect.
I was just going to say, I just want to talk real quick about the line that we walk, or like the double-edged sword kind of about like, yeah, the manuscripts that mean the most are the hardest to query because, you know, you don't want them to get rejected like that. Those passes feel extra difficult, but those are the books that are going to be most meaningful for you to get out into the world. And also, you know, probably will be the most meaningful for the readers because it means a lot to you. So that shows on the other end. Yeah. So like it is really emotionally difficult to, you know, query something that you are so invested in and care so much about, but it's worth doing because, you know, you might end up with it out in the world like this. And this is, I mean, this is sort of like, I don't know. It's just, it's like a happy ending to a story that we just, you know, weren't sure about for a while.
Yeah. And it's so hard because you put your heart and soul into this thing just for people to implicitly say that like, it's not good enough either by rejection or just by no response. And like, how can you not take offense to that? Right. Like
response is the worst, by the way, like that, the silence is just like, that's hard.
Yeah. And
so, yeah. So let's, I mean, let's pivot back to business and talk logistics. I mean, in a sense, so the broader question is, like you're investing so much of yourself into Tealmore, John.
Yeah.
And the benefit that I get from that is that not only do I have a book contract and we're going to put a book out together, but we're also going to do it within a year, basically.
Yeah.
Which is very aggressive and goal oriented. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear you reflect on how you go about setting goals for Tealmore bursting out onto the world.
Yeah. So it's always based on resources, and because we're not doing a ton of books all at once. Like we do have several books on the go, but it's still within what we project we can handle. So, if we were trying to aim for like 10 books this year, that's too much. And then, it'll come at a cost. So there's going to be another author that we're signing at this point in time. But her book is going to be slated for 2025, mm-hmm. because 2024 yours is going to be the last book of 2024 for us. So we'll have four books. Four books with four authors coming out. And that's more than enough for us to keep us busy and to move forward.
Do you feel like that is sort of the projection going forward? And I'm speaking because I, my only experience is with Cardinal Rule Press, but the way they work is they pick, between like somewhere between like four and six titles a year, and that's it. And that's what they, they go into the year knowing that, and then they sort of space out, their marketing, and they know when to put attention on which book, and that's, that's what they're working with. Is that sort of your goal also, to stick with like you're doing four books this year? Do you think you'll do four books next year, or you're going to expand?
It's going to be about growth. We don't want to get huge, like, although, being, if there was a top six with us, that'd be great.
The more,
sure.
Until more.
But
right. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Of course, that'd be great. But like, you can't just be in that position. Like, you have to get to that point. And I don't want it to come at the cost of like treating any of the artists like their numbers. Like, okay, here's your book, let's pump it out. Here's your resources, let's go. I know from my experience that like being published is a really big deal. So we do want to focus on that experience, especially since I had such a terrible experience. So I know both ends. So growth is on our radar. Like, it's one of the top things that we're focused on, but not at the expense of other things. So we don't want to limit the books we produced by a number, just whatever is most reasonable with the resources we have at that time. And we'll hopefully keep increasing that. Part of what I would like is, earlier in the conversation, I said, what does it look like if I wanted to produce, like 500 books? Like, is that physically possible? By myself, yeah, it could be, but what's the quality of those books going to be? Because right now I'm sitting on what, like a couple hundred stories and concepts and drafts. I don't know how many of those I would actually publish, knowing what I know now, like I said. But what happens if in publishing those 500 books that I want to achieve, it's actually a collective effort and it's with other authors. Like, it's 500 books of everyone's work, I almost feel like that's way more meaningful, because again, 500 books for me is kind of ego driven. I like the latter more. So, we have a lot of big plans coming.
I like that a lot. I feel like that's sort of a great sentiment to end on, because it encapsulates like what you're trying to do and just, why you open, why you started the publishing business in the first place. Why people are going to be drawn to want to work with you, because you're doing it for all the right reasons. It's not about, the money or the fame or, being part of the big six, although that would be amazing. But like, you're doing it because you want to put good stories out into the world. And I feel like that is like, that's the only reason anybody wants to do any of this. Like, it's really respectable and just heartwarming to find that in, the publishing business, I guess, because you just,
I appreciate
it. It feels
that.
Like a numbers game sometimes. Yeah.
And for sure, I mean, everyone has to make, like, money is the lifeblood of all business, right? It's the oxygen. So,
totally. Yeah.
Yeah, we're in this definitely to make money, but it's a little bit more than that too. So it's actually much more than that. So I wouldn't publish something I wouldn't want my own kids to read. And they read wild things. So, you know, like, I'm super excited about that naked.
That's right.
They're going to love it. It's going to
get
be
ready,
sick.
World.
My kid's going to love this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, representation matters, guys. There aren't a lot of naked kids in books, and Finn really needs. He needs
probably because
be
it's
seen.
A very fine line to walk.
It is our most natural self, minus a horse mask.
Minus the horse mask. It bears
minus
part.
The horse mask.
Oh my
There's
gosh.
No judgment. It's all fair. So,
I mean, dude, thank you for coming on and being so, like, transparent and candid about the process and the, you know, the impetus for the publishing company and just all of it. Like, we are stoked for you. I'm so excited to see, like, what happens with Teal'c going forward. I can't wait to, like, you know, watch it all unfold and, like, to get to be a part of it, you know, to, like,
can't
push it forward.
Yeah,
and promote.
I mean,
and celebrate.
Yeah, in the best way possible. Can't wait for you to be too busy to help us with the podcast anymore.
Yeah, right. We're gonna get that email one day, and he's gonna be like, "Sorry, guys,
I quit."
it's likely gonna happen, but I have, you know, strategic plans to handle when that happens. So I'm already thinking about
it.
So.
Oh my!
Not that I'm thinking about, like, oh god, I can't wait to stop editing this stuff,
strategy.
But, like, I want to make sure that I will not ever leave you guys high and dry. There will be a point where I have to be more strategic. With my time. But now's not that time. So I guess I'll be, you know, probably
that's,
editing.
Well, that's fine. We're here for it. Yeah.
Until then, I will continue to lighten your load by waiting until the very last minute to start editing my episodes. So, you know,
of course. Absolutely.
That's a little sausage.
I wouldn't have
making.
It any other way.
Yeah, that's right. Apparently I won't either.
Oh
so.
My gosh.
But let's end on that procrastination note. John, thank you so much. I know Brennan's already said thank you, but thank you in particular for you know, soberly treating my ridiculously goofy manuscript with the intent that I bring to it, which is, you know, I think it's going to entertain a lot of kids, and so can't wait to see it born.
And like I said, if nobody likes it, like, let's just, you know, let's talk about the worst case scenario. Everyone's like, ah, no, let's get this book
delete
banned because it's
podcast.
Naked.
Come on now.
Right.
I'm going to love it. You're going to love it. Like,
I'm going to, I
already
love
have
it.
Fans. Our kids are going to love it. So, and it doesn't, it doesn't matter that you're trying to, you know, make a certain audience happy. It's just, you can't appease everyone. You can't make everyone happy. And that should be the goal. Just make yourself happy and, you know, other people will appreciate that because it's, you know, it's more authentic. It's you.
Last thing, it bears being said that the story is not about me. Lest anyone ever see this book out in the world and think that it's autobiographical in any way, shape, or form.
You should have left that as, like, an unknown. Like, is it?
It's got extensive back matter, complete with photos, historical photos.
Josh doesn't sleep very well. This is what he does at night.
Yeah.
I run around with a horse mask on. Yeah, beware.
Thanks for listening this week.
Find all of our episodes and other associated links and information at linktree.com/verseshow.
Or reach out to us on Blue Sky, Instagram, or Threads. Thanks again, and we'll see you next verse.
Bye!